Hi everyone, welcome back to Tuesday Talks. Our guest today is Shilpa Mehra. I hope I'm pronouncing this right. Please introduce yourself.
Okay, great. I will do that. My name is Shilpa Basir Mehra. I am a lawyer by profession. I'm the fourth generation in a family of lawyers. I came to the UAE in 1994 in January after I got married. I have worked in a local law firm in the beginning where I picked up the knowledge of the local laws here. I took a break from my regular office job at the time when I was having my two sons. And then I went back to a regular office job in 2001 when I joined an international marine company as their in-house legal advisor. That was a major breakthrough for me because my knowledge and my reach went from local to international since the company had 30 offices worldwide. I love sharing my thoughts, and the best way for me to do that is to write. So I thoroughly enjoy writing. I write for a local magazine as well as for Khaleej Times. So that is me in a nutshell.
Amazing, amazing. So our topic for today, the title is called Attitude. And before we get into talking about what happened with you and your life death experience, as you describe it, can you tell us a little bit about your upbringing? You know, how I'd like to hear about how your attitude was. I don't know if it changed before, after the accident, but I would like to hear about that.
I am actually really happy, Latifa, that you asked this question because I think our upbringing and our experiences, they have a huge role in shaping our attitude. I'm going to share a little bit about my childhood with you because there are some influences from there that remain in my life till now. I was brought up in a very loving family. I had a beautiful childhood, love, care, warmth, sharing, caring. I am the youngest of my four siblings. And, our house, I used to joke with my mother that she should put guest house outside our house because there were always people. The doorbell was ringing, the dog was barking, and there was tea being made all the time. So, you know, people say that I have good communication skills or I have interpersonal skills. I think that is because I was chatting with my little cousin who was 5 years old, as well as a grandmom who was 80 years old. So it just becomes a part of you to be able to communicate with people, to be able to relate to people. And I think a lot of it has got to do with my parents. You know, my mom, her name is Madhu, which means honey in Hindi. And she was just so sweet and loving to everybody. And, you know, being nice to people, I saw that almost from the day I was born. So it became like, you know, you're supposed to talk nicely to people. If you can do something for someone, do something for someone. She was always like loving, giving, caring, welcoming. My dad is a very busy lawyer. He doesn't have the time to have a cup of tea with you, but if you want any help, he is always there. So this thing of doing something for people, you know, that is something which I saw from childhood. And that has, in a way, shaped my attitude even now. So it kind of remains with you. The childhood years are just so important.
So you would describe yourself as something from both of your parents? So honey, very sweet.
A little bit, Latifa. I cannot take so much credit. I will be lying. I'll be flattering myself. But yeah, a little bit, I would say I have taken a small iota from them. Yes.
I think we would all like to have a little bit of the good traits of our parents. So take us through your life right before the incident, and then tell us what happened there.
Okay. It's very interesting. You know, I feel my life is like divided into Northern Hemisphere and the Southern Hemisphere. And the year 2003 is like an equator, because everything is your life before and then your life after. You know, so my life before, like I briefly touched upon my childhood, very nice. I was a good student. Luckily, I was good in my studies. Family time, holidays, everything was really, really nice. I got married. I came to the UAE. I had two boys. I had a soulmate for a husband. I would say a profession I'm very glad to be in. I love my work. So everything was actually pretty close to, you know, picture perfect, I would say. And then arrives, like in the horror movies, you go ding dong and something happens. Arrives the year 2003, and it was on 27th of February. I had a very, very bad headache. I had gone to the Dubai Tennis Stadium actually to see world-class players playing a match. My friend took me there. And this terrible headache started. I thought it was because of the noise and smoke, but the headache, in spite of all the Panadols, just was not going. So in 24 hours, I had collapsed and I had slipped into a coma. So it happened so fast that I don't think anybody really knew what was going on. I don't even remember being taken from my house in an ambulance. It was just a blackout. And when I went from NMC Hospital to Rashid Hospital, because they had done a lumbar puncture in NMC and it was diagnosed as meningitis. So the doctor said that Rashid Hospital would be the best place for it. So I was there. I was on the ventilator. I was in coma for about 40 days, I heard. I was declared dead twice in the middle because I stopped breathing. And they used that electric shock, that defibrillator to revive me. So yeah, it was a real, real drama. And when I opened my eyes, you know, my father and sisters, they don't live here in Dubai. They live in Delhi, in India. They were standing there. My husband was standing there. And it was like, okay, what's happening here? I mean, I knew something had happened, but because I had a complete, blackout, I didn't know what had happened. So it was then coping up with, you know, what had happened. I was there for 14 days in Rashid after coming out of coma, because they have to wait for my vitals to, you know, stabilize. And then I was flown into Delhi, into Apollo Hospitals. I was there for 6 months. And after that, in my house for 2.5 years on the bed.
Oh, I don't even know what to say. It sounds very, very rough. So how did you cope? How did you go through all this? What happened?
It was diagnosed as, you know, viral meningitis. Mm-hmm. And Latifa, it was waist down affected my body. So fortunately, my brain was fine, my hands were fine. But it was waist down, everything was zero. So I was sitting like a statue, like a mannequin on the bed for about 2.5 years. And the only treatment really was, you know, physiotherapy. Because I wrote a book also, it's called All Battles Aren't Legal. And I called this episode or incident, whatever you want to call it, it was like my own personal tsunami. It came and it devastated everything. And then there was quiet. You know how everything becomes quiet again. Mm-hmm. So the body had come out of coma, but it was still like waist down paralyzed. So there was no medicine really. They say nerves recover on their own. The only treatment was physiotherapy. So I did that for 2.5 years. At the start, it was a passive physio when only he was moving my legs and muscles because I could not feel anything. There was zero strength. And I think in times like that, you realize, what family is all about. Because if it wasn't for them, I really wouldn't be over here and smiling and having this conversation with you. So yes, it's thanks to God, thanks to my family, my doctor, my physio, that I am where I am today.
So, how did you get back up? I'm sure it was very difficult trying to go back to your normal everyday life. So how did that start, and how was your mentality? How were you feeling when you were dealing with all this?
Well, it was quite a tough time, I think. I mean, people always feel very bad about my coma. But actually, coma, because I had zero feelings, I had zero awareness. So I found the coming out of it and the long rehabilitation and coming to terms with life and learning everything like a baby learns, move one toe, move my knee one day. Turn a little bit the other day. Standing was like such a big thing with so much support all around me. Taking one step, standing for 10 seconds. I mean, everything was actually like a baby. And because my two kids were already born, I was having like a kind of a rewind happening in my mind, because I remember them doing this, doing that. But of course, children, I think the beauty is because they are not aware, they don't feel scared. They'll take one step, they'll fall, they'll get up, they'll again take a step. We adults, we are so scared of this, that. We know that if we fall, we'll injure ourselves, we can fracture something. So that was like a big difference, of course, between me and a child. But I think the support of everybody was phenomenal in helping me. They had prayed to all the gods, they were there every day. So my morale, my emotional strength, and what they call mental strength was very high because of them. So that really made a huge difference in my coming back to life. And of course, physio was the only thing that was physically helping me to get there, So that all happened between 2003 when I fell sick up to September 2005. When I said, okay, now I want to take charge of my life. I'm catching a flight back to Dubai and I am going back. And I got my kids' admission. And I told my husband, let's start. Let's start all over again. I am sure we can do this. So then it was like just trying to do everything normal with my walker. It was wonderful to eat food on the table, not on the hospital bed. To go to the kitchen, open the fridge, and not be pressing a remote bell from my bed that I want this. Can you get me this? Doing homework with my kids. There was, small, small things that actually we people, we don't realize every day how lucky and how blessed we are. But when something is taken away from us and then given to us, everything is like a wow.
Yeah, you start to appreciate the little things in life.
Yes, exactly.
I got goosebumps. Wow. So, can you walk us through your mental journey in all this?
I think I am a big fan of the human brain because I got these words that I'm sharing with you, Latifa, for everybody's benefit. He was a leading neurologist who came to meet me on the first day in my Delhi hospital. And he said, you're very lucky that nothing has happened to your brain because we have physiotherapy for arms and legs. We don't have physio for the brain. So it was something so non-medical, but yet so human that he said. And I think that kind of set my path of gratitude that thank God nothing has happened to my brain. that was such a, I would say, a motivating factor, that everything that I was doing was, you know, when you're coming from ground zero, everything is, you're building up. So everything that I was doing like almost for the first time in my second life, not in my first life, you know, because I'm kind of reborn. The doctors also call me a, you know, medical miracle. I think if you have the family love and support, you have a sense of gratitude. I think the most important attitude which one can have is an attitude of gratitude. It makes life easier to deal with, you know, challenges, because I had my illness, somebody else can have some other issue. Right now, the whole world is dealing with COVID, a big challenge. But I think your attitude to overcome difficulties, first to accept them and then to overcome them in whatever strength you can gain from whatever source, if it's from your family, if it's from some practice that you do, if it's from your work, your fitness regime, whatever support you can get. And it's your mental health forum. I would love to say that don't be shy to ask for help. I was not shy. I'm still not shy. If I need a helping hand, I ask for it. If the walk looks difficult, I ask for a wheelchair. I use my walker. I am not ashamed, you know. So I think this whole stigma of asking for help, it's a big problem. And I'm glad that you are on mental health, are, you know, talking about so many issues. So all these things, they really helped me.
I'm very, very happy to hear that your family was surrounding you and motivating you to keep going. So was it easy going back into, for example, the workplace, starting work again? Or was it just like nothing happened? Like, was it kind of like second nature, like picked up from where you from where you left off? Was that how it felt, or was it again feeling like you have to start from scratch? How was that work for you?
It's a very, very interesting question, Latifa. See, 2005 September, I came back. So first it was like just getting into the mode, because, you know, I had been out of my house in Dubai for 2.5 years. So it was really getting back to it, getting the children back to school and settling in. And then I got in touch with my clients. I didn't think of joining a regular office, but fortunately I'm a lawyer. I can do some work from the house. So I started off with small random assignments, I would say. I had meetings also. Many of them were kind enough to come to my house. A few places I went. So all that was happening. And then, I mean, it was a beautiful stroke of, I think, destiny, that the same company where I was working when I slipped into a coma, they had a requirement for an in-house lawyer. And in 2010, they contacted me. So I was very lucky that the workplace was the same. The contracts, the scope of work was the same. The management had changed. So there were new people, but very understanding, so like receptive. They made me feel so at home. So getting back to work, I was very apprehensive. I remember I had started crying one night before my first day. I was telling my husband, I had not sat in an office chair for so long, you know, because that happened in 2003. And we're talking about 7 years, you know, I've not even sat on a desk and chair. I was like, I can't do this. And he was like, you know, try. If you can't, you could just tell them and I'm sure they will understand. But they were very, very nice. So I worked with them up to 2013, when they had a corporate restructuring and they shifted to Holland. So I worked with them until then.
That's amazing. I want to ask you, what advice do you have for the people who had the same experience as you?
First of all, Latifa, I don't want anybody to have an experience like mine. I would not wish it for anyone, but I think for anyone who's having difficulties, because, you know, all of us, we have our own individual journey. I would say that, you know, don't give up hope. Life is beautiful. It's a gift. It's very precious. So value it. And I always tell everybody that, you know, appreciate life, and life gives you more occasions to appreciate, celebrate it. So those are the things. And I think when you value life, when you treat it as something precious that has been given to you, you do everything to make the most of it, to make the best use of it. If there's something that I cannot do, I don't think about it. I think about what is it that I can do. Because, you know, they say whatever we think, we kind of magnify, it kind of manifests in our life. So I don't think of, I can't do this, I can't do this, I can't do this. No, I'm always thinking, okay, I can do this. I can write an article. I can talk to Latifa. I can make a contract. I can do this. So I think it just keeps you going, kind of a thing. So it's like, don't give up hope. There is always something that you can do. And we all are unique in our own ways. So don't compare your life with anybody's. We have our own life path, and just make the best of everything.
Sorry. So before we move on, guys, for our viewers on our Insta Live and for the ones on our Zoom call, if you have any questions, please write them down. Towards the end of our talk, we will be getting back to you. So I would like to ask about, so you said that you stayed motivated through the tough time and it helped you move on and get back up. But my question is, were there any reality slaps? Anything that you did not experience or did not maybe pay attention to until after your incident?
Yeah, I think there were like loads of reality slaps, you know, because...
Yeah, as in like they could be seen as lessons or something. Yeah. So if you could share those with us.
Absolutely. I think, you know, the biggest lesson was that when you have everything going for you, you don't even know about it. You don't realize it. You don't appreciate it. So suddenly when everything is taken away from you, you know, you're just like a statue on the bed. Everything is like a, you know, reality for you. Everything is a lesson for you. And the biggest thing is to just then say, wow, I can do this today and I can do that tomorrow. And it's looking forward to the next day. So I think hope is a very big thing that keeps us going. And I think challenges come, you can call them lessons, you can call them reality slaps, but it was like, this has happened. Now, what is it that I can do about it? That was my, I would say, realization or my lesson. And I still use it every day that, okay, this is a problem. What can I do about it? Because there will always be problems, but we have to deal with them. And we have to find the best way to deal with them. I'll give you a very small example, Latifa. This is not during my illness, but more recently, I had gone to Georgia, to Tbilisi, and I was talking to the hotel concierge of the best place to get the view. So he says, well, you can walk up like this. I don't know how many kilometers up a steep hill. So I said, well, I can't do that. So tell me something else, you know. Can I watch the most beautiful sunset? And he said, yeah, you can go up to in a Uber till there. And after that, you have a tram and you have a lovely restaurant and you can see the sunset. So what I'm trying to say is that if something doesn't work for you, don't keep focusing on that and feeling bad for yourself. Find a way of whatever works for you. I am sure you'll find something. So if I have to tell people, like, stop complaining about what is not possible or what is not happening in your life. focus on something good. And wherever you divert your mind and your energy, things will happen. They do start to happen.
I hear a lot of, I think that's the lawyer in you trying to find solutions. I'm very glad that that kind of, you know, manifested into your attitude towards this whole thing. So had a positive outcome. I wanna ask, so we spoke about COVID a bit earlier. What's your view on it as in, so much mental stress is being caused by COVID and people are worried about loved ones. So how do you see the importance of family during COVID?
Well, I think, you know, whenever something that we love a lot is even in a little bit of danger, we, of course, tend to worry. We call more often. We want to be in touch. Like I stay away from my family that way. So whatever we can do. But I think the only thing that can help us in any trouble situation, be it the COVID or be it the tsunami, is hope. You know, so we can just hope that everybody follows the rules, maintains safety, be home, be safe, you know how we keep saying. And we just wish for these troubled times to be over very soon so everybody can be healthy and safe.
So we're seeing a few questions here. I was actually just about to mention that. I mean, while hearing you speak, you know, mashallah, all I can see is resilience, resilience, resilience. So how can one build mental resilience?
Well, I am really not any author or coach or anything, you know, I don't have any accreditations or qualifications to talk about this. I just have my own personal life experience that I'm sharing with you. And I think what kept me going, you can call it, resilience, but was I find life very precious and I don't believe in giving up. So it's like whatever I can do to make it happen. When you value something, you know, it's like asking a mother what motivates her to love her child. She doesn't need any motivation. She will love her child anyway until the last day of her life, you know. So you can call it mother's love or mother's resilience. So I love life. I love to live life to the fullest. And if the fullest has got modified for me that I cannot go for a trek, okay, never mind. I'll find something else that I can do with my life. So I think resilience is about also adapting. You know, there's something that you cannot do. Try to figure out what is it that you can do. Find your space of happiness, of what makes you happy right now. If you think that you had no time for, you know, fitness because you had a very, very busy job, maybe you can focus on that. Or you wanted to do yoga or meditation, or you wanted to write a book or something. Find something. An empty mind is a devil's workshop. So keep busy, keep engaged, keep looking for positives. And when you look for positives, you will value what you have. I think life is such a gift that to value it, you don't really need, you know, resilience. Once you know, because it was snatched away from me and I got it back, I truly value it. So I don't really find it, you know, resilience as such. I find it just appreciating it and living it to the fullest.
Wonderful. So before we answer the next question, I just want to ask, so I'm sure there were many difficult days, during the incident or maybe after when you just started to get back up. How do you cope with those difficult days? Meaning you're just having a very tough day and it's mentally stressful, or you're feeling sad, or how do you go through this? Because the next question is, how can we build a positive attitude? So how did you get over them?
Okay, I think,
or maybe you can give us an example of a tough day for you.
They were like, you know, small difficulties. There's such baby examples because that time there was no COVID, you know. But I think I'm always looking for options. And there, you very rightly said, probably is the lawyer in me. You know, we have the best situation, then we have the second best situation, the best scenario, and we all the time weighing up pros and cons, you know. So my mind is very logical. That's the way I think. So if something is not happening, that idea is just shunned away. So I automatically start looking for the best option then available to me. So I was going to a restaurant that had steps. So that restaurant, the minute I saw steps, I said, no, we'll go from the poolside because poolside is ground level. So they're very small examples that this is what you can't do. This is what you can do. So again, it's there were so many things, but I just shoo away the negative things. I sometimes just take a break. I have like a hot tub bath, a nice cup of coffee, you know, speak to someone I really like, hear a favorite song of mine. Just, it's okay to be sad. You can't always be positive, you know. If you're having a moment when you're not happy, that's okay. We don't have to be so hard on ourselves. We don't have anything to prove to anybody. So take a break. Take a, how we say, we can take a day off. So have your moments. But the important part is to bounce back. So you take a break, you take a breather, but you have to bounce back because, like how I say again, life is too precious to just be sad.
Very well said. Thank you so much. We have a question here that says, how important was discipline for you?
Oh my God. I don't know the D of discipline. I am not a disciplined person at all. But when I was in the hospital has its timetable, you know, and we tried to copy that timetable into my life when I was laid up in bed. That discipline really helped because when you have a time for everything, you make sure everything gets done, you know. So that was very helpful, whether it was acupressure, it was meditation, it was physiotherapy, there was time to sleep, eat, meet people. I would write then also. I wrote my book actually when I was laid up in bed. So I think discipline is very important. You want to get things done. It is very important. And even right now, if I have an assignment to do, it doesn't matter. I am very disciplined when it comes to my work. I mean, if I've taken an assignment, it has to be done. You know, so that there I'm very disciplined. Otherwise, in my eating, drinking, sleeping, I don't follow a timetable right now because I'm not working in an office job. So I do have that much of luxury to be flexible.
So I was literally about to ask you this, and Rama in the comments just did. Tell us about your book and where we can get it. I would love to hear about your book.
Okay, so my book, Latifa, like I'm not an author. I'm, you know, I don't write. I don't know ABC of it. So one day in the hospital in Delhi, my father walked in with a laptop saying, you must be very bored. So why don't you, you know, do something on it? Because I was always known to be a laptop addict. You know, I mean, if I'm awake, my laptop is on, kind of a thing. And I was looking at him like, who's going to do anything on a laptop? I don't have the strength. I don't have the energy. But then my doctor also came and my family started, pushing me that, why don't you write? You can write. I mean, you write contracts normally, but you can write. Why don't you write about your experience? It can be very, you know, motivating. And I think a major push besides from my family, it came from my doctor because he said that we in our white coats, when we tell our patients anything, they always tell us, doc, you don't know what I'm going through and you don't understand. But if you as a patient were to write your story, that would really be something that they can relate to. So that is what got me started. And, you know, Latifa, every day was a different mood. I would write on any topic. because I thought I was writing my, you know, personal diary. So there was no agenda. I had nothing to prove to anyone. I didn't even know whether it'll get published. I thought maybe my family will, you know, print 20 copies and just read it and that's it. But anyway, then it got published. It was all my dad's doing. I had no role to play in it at all. And it was launched in December 2005 in Delhi, and then in May 2006 in Dubai. So yes, a long time ago. It's going to now, next month coming up for its third edition, and it will be available on Amazon. And the name of it is All Battles Aren't Legal.
I'm going to make sure to get myself a copy and I will let you know. You guys, if you want to read more about her story, obviously, please buy her book. I'm very, very amazed. And, you know, we have nice comments here. Someone is saying, you're such a warrior. And I agree. I mean, I'm just sitting here listening and I'm like, amazing, amazing. The resilience, getting back up, it must have been extremely hard. But thank you. That's very inspiring.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you're such a strong person. We have another comment here. So someone's asking, you mentioned you have children. How are they during this entire process?
Oh, I think children basically are amazing. Childhood is amazing. And ignorance is beautiful. I would say innocence, actually. When I fell sick, they were 3 and 6. And, you know, at 3 and 6, you don't know what meningitis is. Mm-hmm. You know, can't even pronounce it. So they just thought that mom has got a very bad headache and she's not well. So my entire thing in their mind was mom is not well. So I was very lucky that I didn't have to like tell them anything. They were not worried at all. They saw me sitting on the bed. I could talk. I could still help them with their drawings and, you know, their little projects, stick this and put this here and all that. So they were happy. Their life was pretty much going on in their play school and, a visit to the swimming pool and a McDonald's burger. So their life was pretty okay. So I was happy that it happened when they were not aware of it at all. And when they grew older, right now they are 20 and 24. So when they grew older, they knew, okay, you know, she has a problem, but she manages. Because by that time, I had again started working. I started going to office and the whole thing had started, like I would say, pretty normal. So yeah, so they didn't really have to deal with anything. They were protected from the harshness of the reality because they were very little when it happened.
That is good news. And how about your husband, if you're okay with me asking?
I really could not have managed. Such a pillar of strength. And, you know, some people, they don't like say too much, but like always there. I mean, there were times when I would be worried that, oh, the maid is going today. How will I do this? How will I manage this? It was always like, it's okay, relax, you know, I'm here. So that kind of support, if you get, that's when people call me strong. It's not me. There, it took an army of people to get me here. So I really cannot be sitting there like an army general and saying that I won the war. I did not. There was so much support from everywhere. And he played a huge role in it, of course. Like always there and always proud of whatever I did. If right now I'm talking to you, Latifa, on mental health, he's also very proud about this. So I think that kind of encouragement when you get, it's very, very uplifting.
I'm so proud of you for your mental fortitude. You are a warrior. And it's so wonderful to hear about the support system what your the support system around you. Guys, if you have any questions, please ask them. You can ask them on IGTV, sorry, on our Insta Live or on our comments here on Zoom. We have nice comments.
People are very kind, and so are you, Latifa. Thank you.
I'm very, very glad to have had you on this. So for this month, our campaign was women's mental health. And, you know, one of your contacts, I think, reached out and was like, you know, check this person out. And I was like, okay, sure, one second. And I read and I'm like, oh my God, it would be amazing to have her on Tuesday Talks. And I'm very, very happy that we started this this month's campaign with you as our guest speaker. So I'd like to say thank you so, so much. And here we have another comment saying, I'm so impressed how strong of a person you are. We have a question here. What do you recommend if one doesn't have any hope? Or maybe if someone struggles to find hope?
I would say you have to try harder. You just have to try harder to find hope, because the sun will rise tomorrow morning. Just imagine if the sun gave up on us, you know. So don't give up. We all are unique. We've come onto this planet. Don't give importance to our birth date and the day we die. It's a little dash in the middle. Do something with the dash, and there is always something we can do. You just have to look harder to find that. And we all can do something. We can make a difference. We just have to push ourselves sometimes a little harder to find that, to find a meaning for life. And if nothing else, what I feel is, when the minute you start to help other people also, you know, that really makes you feel in a place where you feel very useful. Because many times people start to feel useless, that, oh, I can't do this. I'm not good for anything. Try doing something for somebody. And when you make a difference in somebody else's life, that makes a huge difference in your life. You suddenly start feeling important. You start feeling valued. Somebody appreciates your efforts. You get to hear a thank you. Bring a smile to someone's face. Make a blind person cross the road. Feed one hungry person. I mean, there's always something we can do, you know. Somebody from your audience, Latifa, has asked this question. My question to that person would be that, you know, you obviously have a roof on your head, you've got food to eat, you've got a laptop, you've got Wi-Fi, you've got lots going for you. There are so many people in the world who don't have this, you know. So how can we give up hope? We are very, very blessed to be in this Zoom conversation and be having this talk. So I think sometimes we just need to dig a little harder. There's so much.
Count the blessings.
Yeah, just count your blessings.
Yeah. Very well said. Thank you so much. We're also getting very nice comments again. A lot of people are moved and inspired by your story. Very nice. So before we wrap up, I wanna ask you again to just summarize your pearls of wisdom that you would like to share with our audience. Something to end our call with.
I think, Latifa, my basic mantra, if I can say, is of gratitude. I think gratitude is like fertile soil. Whatever you sow in it, beautiful fruits come out of it. So when you are coming from a place of gratitude, you are automatically counting your blessings. You appreciate life, whatever life has given you, your loved ones. You don't crib simply because you're counting your blessings. The opposite, it's like a seesaw. You know, if you're happy and you're grateful, you don't complain. You know, so I love that seesaw, and I want to be in that part of it where I am grateful, so I don't crib. Because, and you know, life has challenges. Who said life will not have challenges? I mean, I always say, you know, an ECG also has to move up and down. If it goes in a straight line, it's not good news. So life will have its up and down. It's supposed to. you know, but we just have to face it, accept it. And if we count our blessings and we think about all that we have, it's a beautiful place to be in. And one more thing, which I should mention over here, I wrote that in my book, there's a chapter, it's called Build a Wall. Because, you know, Latifa, there are a lot of people who will be out there who are negative and who pull us down. They take away from our aura, from our energy. What I do when I'm stuck with those people is I just mentally shut down. So I will be sitting there, I'll be nodding my head, I'll have a little smile on my face, but I don't really listen. So for people who say that, you know, it's difficult to be positive because I got this situation, you have a negative boss in your office, you still have to go to office, build a sort of, I would say that would be your, you know, resilience, that you're having negativity coming your way, but you're not letting it touch you. So build a sort of a wall, and, you know, invisible wall, which is not apparent to the person who you are talking to, but don't get affected so much. I think we take life too seriously. You know, we are here for a short time. Let's enjoy ourselves, appreciate life, celebrate life, and it's beautiful.
That's amazing. That's wonderful. And just one more thing, our title for it, this talk was attitude. Can you just give us a few words about it to end?
Okay. So I am lucky, Latifa. From childhood, I have a positive bent of mind. So my attitude has been largely shaped from my childhood. And then I think I forgot to mention to you, I was good in my studies. I'm a gold medalist from the, you know, law faculty. So I was very confident that way. I got into this job. I was the like top performer. I got the highest bonus in my company, kind of a thing. So, you know, all those things, they really boost you. Thank you. They really boost you. And I did a dictionary search for attitude before your talk. And it's your set of beliefs, thinking, and principles that are largely influenced by your upbringing as well as your experiences. So my, if I have to end this conversation on any one sentence, would be, I'm too blessed to be stressed. So since I live in that thing of counting my blessings, my attitude is, I just feel blessed. And I think I just count my blessings and I'm very happy where I am.
But what happens when if you didn't have that sort of upbringing, like yours, for example?
Yes.
What should you do?
That would be a difficult picture for me to visualize. But then I always think, you know, because I have studied the science of happiness, and I have, because I've been in hospital, I've interacted with a neurologist a lot. They say brain is the only organ in the human body which can rewire itself. You know, so you see it in movies, you see it in real life, how a son of a thief becomes a police officer. Sometimes I think it is, you know, reverse psychology that works with us. If we are not coming from a happy place, we think that what is it that we can do to be happy, to be successful in our life? You know, so many times it is the reverse psychology that works for us. I can give you just one or two examples of this. I used to see some aunts of mine when in my childhood who would be nonstop talking about their children. And I thought in my mind that time that when I have kids, I will just say they are fine and stop there, because nobody wants to know too much about it. Then when I was laid up in bed during my illness, I had visitors who would come to me and be talking about their various health issues. And it was like, I'm not going to talk about them. They're my issues. I have to deal with them. I don't crib, you know. So if anybody asked me, even when I was in hospital, I would just say I'm fine, which actually is a stupid answer, because if you're fine, why are you there in the hospital? But I did not want to answer all those questions and keep, you know, talking about what happened and what went wrong and everything. I would just say I'm fine, and I would just smile, and that would be the end of the conversation. So I think what this person asked, that what would have happened, I think I would have found something that, okay, all these things are wrong. What is it that I can do to make it right? And that's basically my thinking, that what does help for me to arrive to my state of happiness? I mean, that is my attitude. What is it that I can do?
Right. Very well said. Count your blessings. Try to look for the things to be grateful for. I think you can start there. Something that I usually recommend is every night, just list out three things that you're grateful for. And then if you keep at it, sometimes throughout the day, you'll be searching, actively searching for those things that you would like to remember at night when you're supposed to write down those three things. So then it's just kind of a start. But just like she said, count your blessings, try to find a way. There's always an option. Thank you so much for being our guest speaker. Thank you so much. Your stories have been inspiring. It's amazing.
No, thank you so much, Latifa. I've really enjoyed being here, and I am so glad you have this platform of mental health. It is the most talked about topic nowadays, and so very important with the physical world coming to a halt. It's all about being here and what is going on over here. So thank you so much for all the great work that you are doing. You're doing us all a favor.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm very flattered. Okay, guys, please watch out for our next Tuesday talks. We would love if you guys attend as well. We would love for you to attend as well, Ms. Shilpa.